Now we're holding on Kuf Samach Gimel Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. Continuing on the topic of the details of shtaris and what we do, what rules the Chachamim set up to avoid forgery and alteration of shtaris as much as possible. So the Gemara says Gufa. So getting back to something we said before, Omar Rav Shtar Habahu Ve'edav Al Machak. If you have a shtar where the entire text of the shtar and the signatures of the Edim are all a part of the paper that was previously erased, kosher, then such a shtar is kosher. And now we're going to discuss that point, that on the face of it, then, doesn't that, we'll have to see what potential problems that we would think that would create and how we avoid them. The im toima mochik b'chozer mochik. So Rav says you're going to think maybe the problem is that once that part was already erased, then he can re-erase that part, write a whole new shtar, and meanwhile he'll leave the signatures of the Edim as they are, and then he'll have a false shtar with true signatures of Edim below it. That wouldn't work because Eina Dema Nimchak Pama has the Nimchak Shei Palmin. Because the part of the parchment or the paper that was erased two times doesn't look like the part that was erased only one time. So in other words, what's going to happen is you're going to notice the part, the whole thing was erased. And by the way, you know, it's worth mentioning over here all this discussion about wanting to reuse erased paper and all. I mean, you know, nowadays we would think to ourselves, why bother? A sheet of paper costs less than a cent. But back then, paper and even parchment, even more so, was expensive stuff. You find, for example, in Halacha, that writing paper in Hilchos Shabbos, writing paper was actually considered muktzeh machmas chisar and kis. Nowadays not, again, because paper is cheap, but back then it wasn't. So it was a common thing. You have an old piece of paper that you don't need the text on it anymore. You would want to erase it. You'd want to rub it out and reuse the paper. They found in different places, actually. They found things like that. They found in the Cairo Geniza and in other such things. They found things like that where you have papers that were written and rewritten. Sometimes even with modern technology, they're able to find what was originally written on it, but in any case, with the technology they had then, they didn't. But anyhow, so the point is that you might want to erase. So here, though, we're talking about that he wants to do it for purposes of forgery. So again, he has a valid shtar, which they wrote on an erased paper, and the Edim signed also on the erased part. Now, conceivably, he's going to want to erase the body of the shtar, rewrite a whole new one, and leave the signatures of the Edim. It wouldn't work because ain't a daiman nimchak pamachas the nimchak shtei palmin. You can tell the difference. It's not similar. It's not identical. The part that was erased only once versus the part that was erased twice. So now it'll be noticeable that something has been altered over there. All right, the Gemara asks the leichos duma shodi diusa mokam edim meikra. Still, don't we have to be concerned? He might. So what might he have done before he had the edim sign? He might have put some ink. He might have put some ink in the spot where they're going to sign. Whether he writes something over there, whether he does tilta, like we learned yesterday about smudges or marks of ink or whatever over there, or mochikle, then he's going to erase that part. Meaning at that point, then you have the whole, so now you have at that point where the part of the parchment, the part of the paper, where the body of the shtar is going to be so far is unerased, it's fresh paper. The part where the edim are going to sign is going to be written on umochikle. Then he erases that part. Then he goes and writes. Then he goes and writes the shtar and has the edim sign it. And now he's going to go and after the edim leave, he's going to go erase the top part and rewrite it. And then you have so now the entire thing is going to be erased. The part where the edim are and the part where the shtar is. Both parts are going to have been erased, and now it'll look like it was done that way in the first place. People are not going to realize afterwards that the original shtar was written on fresh paper and the edim had signed on erased paper. So the question is, the person may go and put and write something or mark something with ink in the place where the Edom afterwards are going to sign, umochically, then he erases it, then he has the Edom sign over there, then he has the sofer write the body of the shtar on fresh paper up above, then he has the Edom sign on the place that was previously erased, and then, now when he goes and erases the body of the shtar and rewrites it, habalei Eidi v'Eidi, Nimchak Shtei Pamim, then you're going to have the whole thing is erased twice. So actually, I said it wrong, actually. The top part of the shtar, actually, what we're going to do is that the top part of the shtar is not fresh paper. It is previously erased paper. So what you're going to do is then, what it is like this. The sequence of events is going to be, he's going to start with a paper where the top part of it is fresh, and the bottom part of it, he writes something and then he erases it. Then he's going to write the shtar and have the Edom sign on that. And then he's going to erase the top part of the shtar and rewrite it. And then you have the whole thing has been, now the whole thing has, and now the whole thing has been erased, now the whole thing has been erased the same number of times. Or even he could do further. He could have it where both of them have been erased twice. He can write on the whole parchment and erase the whole thing. Put something again over there and have the Edim and erase it and have the Edim sign over there. That's twice. The shtar itself could be written on parchment that was used one time and erased. So now you're going to have that, at the end, he's going to wind up with a shtar. The whole thing was erased twice. And it's not going to be noticeable the difference between the top part and the bottom part where the Edom are. So how do you avoid so again, the Leichos Shilma Shodi Giusa Amokam Edom Meikra, he might put ink ahead of time where the Edom are going to sign, Umochiklei, and then he erases that part, V'chihoda Mochiklei Lahai, now when he erases the top part, Havalei Eidi V'Eidi Nimchak Shtei Pamim, then the result is going to be that both parts have been erased twice. So now Tosfos discusses at some length over here, and they point out that the Edom themselves might. So far, what you have is in the scenario now. So actually, the reason why the Gemara is doing it this way in talking about where we have two erasures, why don't we just say more straightforwardly, like I was starting to say, that we're talking about fresh paper and a space where the Edom are going to sign is erased, because then the Edom are going to notice that and they're not going to want to sign that in the first place, assuming that they're honest Edom. And if they're dishonest Edom, then eventually Basin is going to catch him out on that anyhow, and the guy who has the shtar, it's not going to do him much good. What we're concerned with over here, rather, is, as Tosfos points out, the Edom may not notice the difference between a spot that was erased twice and one that was erased once. So what's going to happen is then, so you have, again, the whole thing was written, then erased, then what he does is the space where the Edom are going to go, he writes again and erases again and has the Edom sign over there. At that point, most of the paper has been erased once. The space where the Edom are going to sign is going to be erased twice. The Edom are not going to necessarily notice that difference. So they're going to sign there. They're going to figure nothing's wrong. They're going to sign there. Then later on, he's going to go and erase the top part of the shtar, which so far had only been erased once. Now he's going to erase it a second time, rewrite it. Now you have the whole thing is erased twice, and he's gotten away with it because the Edom will not have noticed the difference between an area that was erased once and an area that was erased twice. So how do we avoid that problem? So the answer is Omar Abaye Kasava Rav, because Rav holds Eina Edom Chosmin Alamachak Elen Ken Nimchak Befnehim. To begin with, the Edom are not supposed to sign the shtar on an erased area unless it was erased in their presence. So now, in other words, if they see that there's a difference between where they're going, if they see that they're going to be signing on the erased space, then they have to know what was written there beforehand. So then if he does that, then they'll catch him out on it, and they're not going to sign in the first place, because they're going to realize that he's trying to trick people over here. Again, Tosfos has a bit of discussion over here about the exact details. over here, one thing is, the Gemara is going to point out soon that you do have a situation where the Edom are signing on erased paper, on previously used and now reused paper, and there's a special nusach in that case that they have to write. So Tosfos discusses, for example, what about if you were to erase that statement between that statement that says that we signed on erased paper, et cetera, and Tosfos goes through a number of different details over here, expanding on what the Gemara is saying, how we avoid the issue of him being able to erase and rewrite. Well, the Gemara says Meisvi. Okay, but I have a stira to Rav. So we're saying that Rav is saying that you could have a shtar that's written completely on erased paper, and the edim are also on erased paper, and it's fine. We said because again, if he tries to erase it again, then it's going to be noticeable the difference between the area that was erased once and twice versus twice. But a Braisa says, if the shtar itself is written on fresh paper and the edim are signed on an erased area, kosher, then the shtar is kosher. Well, according to Rav, why would it be kosher? Nechush, now we have the problem. Now he might erase the top part of the shtar and put whatever he wants. So before, When we were talking about Rav's scenario about the shtar uve edav al machak. So again, we're talking about that the whole thing had already been written once and erased once, and now we're talking about a second time. What do we do to avoid the problem that he might write and erase the area of the Edom again, and then that's twice, and then the rest of the shtar is going to be twice? And he said, Abaya is saying that the Edom have to know what was written over there. But now we're saying that you can also have where the entire body of the shtar is on fresh paper, and the area where the edim are going to sign is going to be on previously erased paper. And Bryce is saying that's fine. So how could that be fine? What about the genuine shtar is going to be rubbed out, and then he's going to write something over there, v'havilei huva edim al machak, and the result is you're going to end up with a shtar which looks like the whole thing was written to begin with on erased paper, and you're going to think, according to Rab, that it's kosher, when in fact it's not. So the answer is the kasvi hochi. The answer is the edim have to write as follows: Anachna sadid chasamna amuchoka. We the edim have signed on the previously erased part of the paper. Ushtara kosev al miyara, and the body of the shtar is written on fresh paper. So we do it that way. That avoids the issue because now we have a clear statement on the shtar that we know that the area where the edim are signing was erased, and that the original body of the shtar was not. Later on, if he erases the body of the shtar and rewrites it, then we're going to see that's not fresh paper. That's previously erased paper, and therefore we're going to know that something's wrong over here. Yeah, by the way, you know, we know the difference. We at least with the kind of paper or papyrus or whatever that they use then, we know the difference in terms of how well you can write on it. We have the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos about learning Torah when you're young versus when you're old. It's like writing on fresh paper versus erased paper, where the fresh paper you can write much more cleanly. So you'll be able to tell the difference, in short. So the question is, Dekasvi Heichan. Fine, you're telling me that the Edom are going to write that Nusach someplace, but where should they write it? If they're going to write it underneath their signatures, that's no good. Guy is lay. All the guy is going to do is just going to cut off that strip of the shtar with that statement, and that's that. And if he writes it above the signatures of the edim, then he's going to erase it together with the body of the shtar. So how does writing such a statement on the shtar help us? And the answer is the Kasvin Sada La Sada. We write that statement between the signatures of the two Edim. So now there's no problem. If he tries to cut it off, there goes the signature of the second aid with it. If he tries to erase it, so then there goes the signature of the first aid. And if you have a space between them and you can see that there's something that used to be written over there, then obviously we're going to realize something is wrong over here. The Rishonim actually deal with the question in that case. Generally, we say the Agim's signatures go only on what's before their signatures, not on what's after them. For that reason, for example, if Agim sign on top of a shtar, it's no good. The Agim have to sign at the bottom. So, but over here, we have, if we have the statement between one aid's name and the next, doesn't that amount to then that, then only the second aid is signing and then is signing off on that point, and the first aid is not? So the Rashba and the Ritva deal with a couple of answers of that basically the Rashba gives an answer. Listen, after all, the Edim would not be able to sign without that statement. So therefore, yes, in this particular case, we say that the first aid statement is also, even though it's above that statement, it's still considered that that statement goes on it. And the Ritva says that at least, you know, now that we have, so when we receive the original shtar and we see that the body of the shtar is on fresh paper and the Edim are on erased paper, so then the reason why to begin with the Edim are writing the statement is only to avoid future problems about erasing the shtar, so it doesn't matter whether the fact that the first aid's signature is before that statement. In other words, because the point of that statement is not so much to be part of their address, but more just to prevent further forgery of the shtar after that. So that's what you do. You put it between one aid and the other, and then that way, and again, if that area is erased, then afterwards it'll be noticed. Part of this long Tosfos over here is explaining that is explaining the details of that. And one thing is, if we find a space between the signatures of the aidim, and we see that space was erased, then we know that something's fishy over here because then there probably was that statement over here, and then it was erased, and then who knows what's going on over here with the shtar. So the Gemara says, Yihochi Eima Seifa, but if that's how you're going to learn, then look at the continuation of the Braisa, which says, Hu Alam Machak, the Eid of Alam Yer Apostle, that if it's the other way around, if the body of the shtar is written on erased paper, and the Edim themselves are writing on a fresh part of the paper, posel, then we say the shtar is posel, because then he might erase the body of the shtar and write something else over there. Now, why would that be a problem? Am I posel? Why would it be posel? Hochanami, why don't we have a similar nusach? Anach nasadi chasamna al niyora ushtar al mechaka. Why don't we do Hochanami, nichdebu hochi? So here also, let them write something like that between those signatures. Anach nasadi, we the edim, chasamna al niyora, we signed on fresh paper, ushtar al mechaka, and the shtar is written on erased paper, and again, then later on, when we see that later on, when he erases it, then it's going to be noticeable. And you're going to say Hashtanami my Amrit. What are you going to answer back? You're going to say Moichik v'Chozer Moichik. The problem is that then he's going to erase the shtar and rewrite it, and he's going to say that, listen, you see right here on the shtar, the Edim are telling us to begin with that the paper was previously erased. Ha'amrit ein adomin nimchak pa'amachas nimchak shei pamin. Didn't we say before that you could tell the difference between erased one time and erased two times? So what's the problem? Then why is the Braisa saying flat out that such a shtar is possible when if you try to erase it and rewrite it, then you're going to notice and you're going to know that something was altered over here, because you can tell the difference between one time erasure and two times erasure. So the answer is Hani Mili, only when we have for comparison, Hani Mili Heichet Chasimi Sadi Amachoka, when the Edim are signed on a place that was erased, and meanwhile the shtar itself has also been erased and rewritten and erased and has also been written and erased and written and erased, and then we're saying if you have an area which was erased once versus twice, then those things are noticeable. You can tell the difference. You have an entire shtar before you where the paper was erased and rewritten. You're able to tell the difference between a part that was erased and between that was erased and rewritten twice, which would be the body of the shtar, versus erased and written only once, which would be the signatures of the Edom. And then you have the Edom have that formula between their signatures. But where the Edom themselves are signed on fresh paper and not on an erased paper, so they're not signed on an erasure, but rather on fresh paper, then it's not really going to be noticeable with the body of the shtar whether it was erased one or two times, because you don't have anything to compare it against. So now there's the concern then. So the Braiser just says flat out, the shtar is possible, because even if the Edom were to write such a statement, you wouldn't be able to easily tell how many times the body of the shtar has been written and erased, and therefore conceivably you're going to bring the shtar to Beis Din later. They're going to say, okay, it says the Edom are saying that the body of the shtar is on erased and rewritten paper, but they're not going to realize that it's been erased and rewritten two or three times, because again, there's nothing within the same shtar itself to compare it to. So the Gemara says, so what's the problem? We can still compare it to a different one. The Leisa Megillah Achriti, why don't we bring another scroll of paper or parchment or whatever, take another blank one. The Limchoi, we'll write something on it, we'll erase it. The Lidmi, and then we can compare and we can see whether it resembles the shtar that we're dealing with over here. And the Ritual points out you wouldn't necessarily have to have another Megillah. Conceivably, you could have margins on this one that you can use that were never used. But in any case, so the question is then, so why don't we do that? Why are we saying that the shtar is flat out possible? We should be able to tell it that way. And the answer is like, Dami Mochka Deha Megillta, Lemochka Deha Megillta. After all, the erasure on one Megillah is not going to be the same necessarily as another one. One is thicker paper or parchment, the other one is thinner, or different things like that. Everyone is processed a little bit differently, and therefore you're not necessarily going to compare you're not going to be able to compare so easily from one to the other. All right, the Gemara says still, we still want to be machshir the shtar if we can. We don't want. After all, the Bala Shtar does have a Shtar in front of us. We don't want to have to say that Shtar is forged or altered if we can help it. So why don't we, instead of just saying that the Shtar is possible and throwing it out, why don't we have that, we'll have the Edom themselves, sign their names right there in Beis Din on the Shtar itself. The Limchoik, then we'll have them erase that area and write something else, the Lidami, and then we'll compare, because now we'll be able to see whether now we have the area where the Edom is written, and where the Edom are written is erased twice, and we'll be able to compare it to the part which also we're suspecting might have been erased twice. So why don't we do that? And the answer is Omer of Hoshia, Eda German Nimchak Ben Yomil and Nimchak Ben Shnei Yomim, because there's still a difference also within the shtar itself, between something that was erased and rewritten today and something that was erased and rewritten 2 days ago. So by the time we bring the shtar to Beis Din, it's not really going to be possible to make that comparison and to be able to see the difference between. So when you have it was all done at the same time and you have one part was erased twice and one part was erased once, then we established earlier that we're able to tell that we're able to tell the difference. But when you have over here, we're trying to compare after the fact. We have a space which we don't know if it was erased once or twice, and we're going to try to compare, because later on we're going to go erase it and rewrite it. Then Rav Hoshea is saying it's not necessarily going to look the same, where it's not necessarily going to be something where you can do an exact comparison and be able to notice the difference, and therefore you might not be able to tell. All right, well, the question still is, so fine, why don't we do this? We'll keep the shtar around. So what we'll do is, we'll have the Edom come to Beis Din, we'll have them sign their names in a different part of the shtar so we have it available for comparison. Then we'll erase it, we'll keep the shtar for a day or two, then we'll write something, and then we have a more exact comparison. Now, of course, you could answer here it was 3 days, here it was 4 days, but at this point, the Gemara is assuming that the difference is only between whether it was done the same day or another day, not necessarily how many days it was. And the answer is Amar Rav Yirmiya Chashin LeBeistin Toyin. True, but we do have to be concerned that a Beis Din might make a mistake about that, and they might not know to do that exact comparison like that they might not know to keep the shtar around for the extra day. They might not know to be able to tell the exact difference between one part and another. So therefore the Chachamim say a blanket statement that when you have a case like that where the body of the shtar is on fresh paper and the edim are on erased paper, then we're just going to say that it's possible in order to avoid any potential problem of based in ending up being machshir a false shtar. Now, that's the gusa that we have in front of us is with the word v'lishaye. Rashbam and Tosfos point out that there's another gusa that does not have that word. And according to that, with the Omer of Yumi, Chashin LeBeis Din Toyin, the Gemara, according to that Gersa, all we're saying is that the Rav Yirmiya is saying that never mind keeping it around from one day to another, the Beis Din may not realize to. So in other words, according to the Gersa we have in the Gemara over here, we have Rav Hoshea giving an answer that there's a difference between whether it was erased 2 days ago or more, or whether it was erased today. And then the Gemara asks on that in that case we could keep it around and age the shtar long enough, and Rabbi Yirmiya is answering to that. According to the Gersa, without Vilishaye, Rabbi Yirmiya is giving a different answer than Rabbi Hoshea to the question that Rabbi Hoshea had tried to was answering about why don't we have the edim write it and erase it and rewrite it and compare. Rabbi Hoshea is saying because of the difference between whether it was erased a few days ago versus now, and according to the Gersa, without Vilishaye, Rabbi Yirmiya is saying, never mind that. A different answer would be, we don't want to do that because Chayshin and LeBeis Din Toyin, because we're concerned that Beis Din may not be able to see the exact comparison.
How about asking the Edis if they remembered signing on the signature was signed on something was erased, but the other part was written fresh. Is that something?
That's what we're saying. We don't even have to ask them to remember. We're saying that they could write that nusach on the shtar. They could write that nusach between their signatures. That's what we were saying before. But even that's not going to help because. So again, when the body of the shtar is on fresh paper and the edim are on erased paper, that's fine. All the edim have to do is write between their signatures that nusach that we said before. We, the edim, sign on an erased part and the shtar was written on fresh paper. And that's good, because then later on, if he tries to erase the shtar and rewrite it, then it's not going to match that statement. Here, the what we're talking about over here is the other way around, where the body of the shtar is on erased paper, the edim's signature is on fresh paper, and now we're concerned that when they erase the shtar, you're not going to be able to know how many times it was erased. That's what we're dealing with over here.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to see. Yeah, there's a statement of the edim that the shtar was on erased paper. Sure, but we don't know how many times it's been erased. So now, the last couple of lines of the Gemara over here, we were dealing with the question, well, why don't we try to do a test? So we said, between one piece of paper and another, we can't. They're not necessarily going to be the same. But even on the same piece of paper, so again, here we have two different gersois in the Gemara. One gersa is that we're saying, yes, conceivably, there would be a difference between whether it was erased and rewritten on the same day or a different day. So the question is, well, why don't we age the paper and then try it? And then Rabbi Yirmiya is saying, Chashin LeBeis Din Toyin, we're concerned that a Beis Din might not realize that nuance, and they might not do that. They might not keep it around for the extra day, or they might not be able to tell the difference. Without the word v'lishaye, then it means the Gemara is giving two different answers to the question of why don't we have the edim sign newly and then erase it and then rewrite it and be able to compare. So one answer is because there's a difference between when it was done, yesterday versus today versus another day. And then we have a second answer of Yumi's answer that we don't want to do that to begin with because Beis Din may make a mistake. As Tosfos points out, according to that Gersa, Rav Yirmiya would be saying that there is going to be, that there may not, that, that, that it's not, it's not, it's going to, here in the Hava Amina, the Gemara was assuming that there's only a difference between what was erased and rewritten today versus a previous day. That all previous days would be the same in that regard. Now the Gemara is answering, according to the Tosfos says, without the word Vilishaye, that Rabbi Yirmiyah is giving a second answer, then the Gemara would be saying that there is a difference. There is a difference between whether it was erased and rewritten 2 days ago versus 3 days ago, or three versus four, or whatever, and Beis Din may not be adept enough to notice that difference.
So you
Why don't we make a rule that any erasure makes the shtar pasul? Where it's 1 day, 2 days, ten days.
We don't want to do that because, again, the fact is, with paper having been expensive back then, people do want to be able to reuse paper for their shtaris. And again, as the Rashbam says, the fact is, the guy is coming to Beis Din with a shtar. We don't just want to throw out the shtar unnecessarily. So therefore that's why we have to go through these rules over here, go through these rules and go through these details to see and then figure out the logic behind it. When are we saying that there's a problem, that there might be something erased and rewritten and therefore that the shtar is altered, and when not? So we can't just make a blanket statement. Again, you know, you're thinking of it in 21st century terms. You know, okay, so you have a bad paper, big deal, throw out the paper and get another one. A piece of paper costs less than a cent, but, you know, put yourself back then where it wasn't that way.
So with regard to the answer, he gives the Hashim LeBezen Tayin. Bezen's used to being to check out and to confirm signatures. They used to doing very, very difficult things, and here we're worried that they're not going to know a simple thing.
It's not so simple, though. That's the thing. It's to be able to notice that fine difference between how many times one thing was erased versus another, or to be able to keep the shtar around an extra day and to realize, you know what, there isn't going to be that difference, how old the paper is when it was rewritten on versus not. That kind of fine detail, Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, the Beis Din may not be so familiar with. You're right. I mean, in general, we don't say, in fact, the Ritva points out over here, generally we say, we even learned earlier in the Masechta, we're not to Beis Din Toyin. That means we're not concerned that they're going to be make a mistake in the halacha. Beis Din makes it their business to know the halachas, but a practical thing like this, where it's not something that necessarily comes in front of them very often, and therefore they don't necessarily have the practical experience of seeing the difference between different kinds of erasures, they may not be able to know, they may not notice that difference, or they may not realize that difference, that they have to keep the shtar around for extra days or whatever. Okay. So with all of this, so with everything we've been learning the last couple of days, so the bottom line is, in all these cases where we say the shtar is posel, so that's what it means is, in other words, that so we say, you know, you're fine. You have evidence, at least you may have evidence that there was a loan over here. Maybe the other guy can't say paraiti or whatever. Maybe he can't say lohoyudvorim olam or something like that. But he can always make, certainly we would say that such a shtar is possible insofar as collecting from the chosim shabbatim. The basic idea is basically that any shtar that's not made k'tikun chachamim, that's not made according to the regulations that the chachamim are saying in these last couple of blot, is posel, and you can't use it to collect from nechosim shabodim or anything like that. Even if, let's say, to give your example, let's say we do have the Edim come and they're able to say that yes, this is the actual wording of the shtar that we said to begin with, but nevertheless, since the shtar was not written to Tikkun Chachamim, that it has the blank lines that we learned about on previous dafim, or it has the erasures and rewritings or whatever that we're talking about over here and different things like that, we're still going to say the shtar is possible because the Chachamim have their regulations of how shtaris are to be written to avoid problems of forgery or alteration, and if you don't do that, then you don't have a valid shtar. And it would mean also, for example, if it was a get, it would mean that the chachamim have the ability to say that it's not a valid get, and so forth. Okay. The Mishnah had said, we started with talking about the get poshut versus the get makosher. Again, a get poshut.
What's the halacha? Where do we stand here?
So that's it. So we're saying the halacha is if the Rav had said that if the whole shtar and the space where the Edom are signing is all previously erased and rewritten, then that's fine. Although we said that Abaya says in general, when the Edom are signing on any place that's erased, they have to know what was written there before. They have to see that it was erased in their presence. We said that even if the body of the Shtar is on fresh paper and the signatures of the Edom is on erased paper, it's also fine. Because then what we do is we have them write that special nusach between their signatures to say that to begin with that they sign on an erased spot. And then we have the other way around. We said if the body of the Shtar is on erased paper and the Edom are on fresh paper, then it doesn't work. Even that nusach wouldn't help us because of that problem, because of all these potential problems of having the Shtar, of having the Shtar erased and rewritten. Again, like I said, Tosfos also deals with a number of details within this. For example, when we're talking about what's noticeable, what differences are noticeable versus that not. So you have a number of details in that. For example, you have when there's something written over there and then erased and then rewritten and it dries, then you might not be able to tell so easily the difference between how many times it was erased as opposed to if they sign fresh, then if they sign fresh on the spot, that might be something you might be able to notice. Okay. So next, again, so going back to the Mishnah, we have the Shtar Poshut versus the Shtar Mekusher, where again, the Shtar Poshut, we said, is just a plain Shtar, like the kind we're familiar with, line after line, and the signatures of the Edom at the bottom. And then we had Shtar Mekusher, which was, we talked about the various possibilities as far as that it's folded and pleated and sewn, like looking kind of like a fan or an accordion, or that it's rolled up and tied, or whatever different detailed possibilities that we talked about. So we said there's a number of differences between them in the number of Edom and where the Edom sign and so forth. So now in the Mishnah, we had said that if the Edom on a Shtar Mekusher sign at the bottom, then it's possible because the signatures on a Shtar Mekusher are supposed to be elsewhere. According to those who say that it's folded and pleated, then we said the Edom are supposed to be signed between one pleat and the next, between one line of the Shtar and the next. According to the Huna and according to the Yomi Baba, they sign on the back. They sign on the back perpendicular to the text, as we talked all about that on Daf Kuf Samach Aleph. Anyway, so now in the Mishnah, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Mekusher v'cholor, in Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel had said that if the Edim sign at the bottom of a Shtar Mekusher, then it would still be kosher because a Shtar Mekusher can be turned into a Shtar Poshut by unfolding and unsewing or untying or whatever the Shtar. So now, why does the Tanakhama disagree with that? Heshiv Revi, so Revi replied, L'divir Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, he replied in answer to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, there's another point that you're not taking into consideration. It's not so simple to turn a Shtar Mekusher into a Shtar Poshut. V'haloi ein dumas, manishol zeh, l'zmanishol zeh. Because the dating on one type of Shtar is different than the other one. Poshut, in a Shtar Poshut, what we do is Molach Shana, Marim Leishana. Now, we date documents according to the years of the current king. But what we do is, in a Shtar Poshut, we write the date as in we know. This king has been ruling for a year, so we write that it's year one of the king. Or even in the first year, that is. In Halacha, we consider a king is in his first year, when he becomes king. We learn in the beginning of Masechta Rosh Hashanah, for example, that a Jewish king whose years generally begin from Rosh Chodesh Nissan, so even if he becomes king, Choftes Adar, then that's one day year, which is his first year, and then already Rosh Chodesh Nissan is already called the beginning of his second year. With Goyish kings, it's Rosh Hashanah. Same thing. The point is, in other words, that so there you have. So if let's say the guy became king, and it's still in his first year, it's still before Rosh Chodesh Nissan or Tishrei, respectively, then Monin Leishana, then we put it's his first year. Shtayim, Monin Leishtayim. And if it's his second year, we put the second year and so forth. That's in a Shtar Poshut. But in a Shtar Mekusher, Molach Shana, Monin Leishtayim. In a Shtar Mekusher, if he's been king for only, it's only his first year, we already write it's his second year. Shtayim, Monin Leishalosh, and if it's his second year, we write that it's his third year. We always add one extra year Because the idea is, the Gemara is going to explain soon why they do that, but basically what we want to do is, as we learned in the Mishnah, as much as possible, we want to have as many differences as possible between a shtar poshut and a shtar makor, and a shtar makosher. Again, the reason for a shtar makosher we learned at the beginning of the parak was because you have koyanim who would be kapdonim and would be quick to divorce their wives, and that creates a problem because they can't remarry them. So we have the whole elaborate shtar makosher, which is going to take so long to prepare, that meanwhile the Koyan will calm down. Well, then we want to have as many differences with it as possible between it and a Shtar Poshut as possible, so that they won't have so many people who are able to prepare such Shtaris, and therefore it's less likely for Koyanim to divorce their wives, and therefore that would be another difference that we find, since there are people, as the Gemara is going to point out in a few lines, we do have people who do that kind of thing, who like to add an extra year to the king's rule to make him seem more important, like you say, as if it's not just his first year, like he's fresh on the throne, he's already an experienced king, so the Chachamim took that approach and used that in a Shtar Makosher. So now, therefore, Rebbe is pointing out, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, you're telling us that all you have to do for a shtar makosher to make it into a shtar poshut is unfold or take out the stitches or whatever it is you're going to do exactly, but then you're going to end up with a shtar that's post-dated. You're going to end up with a shtar that's dated a year later than it's supposed to. And that's no good. Imagine a person borrows money from somebody else using a shtar makosher, because even though, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, that format of shtar was originally created for the purpose of gittin, but nevertheless it can be used for other shtaris as well. That one that I mentioned that you can find a picture of in Encyclopedia Talmudis, for example, was not a get, it was some other kind of shtar, and it was written in the makosher format. So he might borrow money from him with a makosher. So let's say he takes out a loan and he writes a shtar makosher, and the shtar is dated year 3 of the king. Because again, we're saying it really is year 2, but in a shtar makosher we add an extra year. So now what's going to happen? Now the loiva manages to get some money. And during that year, Oparale, and he pays off, the Omale Havli Shtaroi, he says to the Malva, give me back my shtar, so you don't try to collect with it again. The Omale Irkasli, the Malva may well say, I lost the shtar, and I can't give it back to you. So what are we going to do? Cost of the Tavra. So the Malva will say, I'll write out a Shoiva for you. I'll write out a shoiver, a receipt, which you can hold on to, and you'll be able to, and then in the future, if I try to collect this loan from you, then you'll be able to take out this shoiver and demonstrate that you already paid me. The shoiver is going to show a date on it. So now what happens is, the Kimoti Zimne, now when the time comes, when it really is the king's third year, Meshavile Poshut, the Malva all this time really did have the shtar, he never lost it in the first place, he had it, now he's gonna turn it into a shtar Poshut, and when the Loiva brings out his shrover, V'omalei, the Malva is gonna say, what shrover? Hani Hashtahu Diyaz Fismino, this is money, that shrover refers to that. He's going to say that you only took out this halvah now, the date that it says in the shtar. The shover was written, the shover was for a previous loan. Because after all, in a shover, you write the true date. So therefore, so Rebbe is saying, all told, then the problem is there's too much of a chance of fraud over here. And therefore, you don't want to have a shtar makosher be able to be turned into a shtar poshut, and therefore, So again, a shtar makosher being dated seemingly a year later than a shtar poshut, that creates this opportunity for fraud, and then you don't want that. Tosfos actually discusses and says, we're not necessarily so concerned about the loiva himself. Listen, if he's going to be so careless as to use a shtar makosher to borrow the money in the first place, then he's not taking care to make sure that the shoiver should also be the same kind of thing or something like that, then that's his problem. The problem really is the lekuchas. The problem is that you're going to have, meanwhile, he may have sold property to other people, and the malveh is going to try to take away from them in payment of the supposed debt that still is outstanding. Mentos says that actually no, you still maybe we are concerned for the loiter. The loiter is not really going to think. Is not really going to think that far ahead to think that there might be this possibility of the Malta playing a trick like that, and therefore he doesn't realize, and he used the Star Posh at the beginning, and now he's receiving a Shover. And therefore, so we don't want to allow that in the first place, Rebbe says. Okay, fine. Well, then how would Rav Chanina ben Gamliel answer that? The answer is Kasava in Kosvin Shover. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel holds, in the first place, you don't write a Shover. Meaning, if we have a scenario like that, where the loiver comes to pay the malva, and the loiver says, I want my shtar back, so you don't try to collect with it again. And the malva says, I lost it. So we actually have, later in our perek, we're going to have a machlokas. What do we do in that case? There's an opinion that kosvin shover, we can tell the loiver, look, you're required to pay him. You're going to have to accept that he'll write you out a receipt. And from now on, you're going to have to hold on to that receipt. Because if you ever lose it, then he could conceivably find the shtar and try to collect from you again, and he won't have any proof to the contrary. The other way of looking at it is in kosvin shover, which means the loiver can say, I'm not obligated to accept that kind of thing that I should have on an ongoing basis. I have to hold on to a shover and make sure I don't lose it. Rather, Mr. Malva, if you can't give me the shtar back, then I'm not obligated to pay you until you find that lost shtar. The two different opinions we're going to have later on in the pattern. Very well, then. Rebbe holds kosvin shover. So Rebbe holds, you have this whole concern over here. You have, again, the shtar mekusher, which seemingly is dated a year later. Then you have, he pays off the debt during that year. He writes a shover. The malva says, I don't have the shtar. So we write out a shover. Later on, the malva says, I found the shtar. And here, it's a shtar poshert, and it's dated a year later. And your shover, which is dated earlier, is from an earlier loan. Meanwhile, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says the whole thing never begins in the first place. When the loiver comes to pay off the debt, if the malva says, I don't have the shtar, the loiver is going to say, well then, goodbye, I'll come back when you can find the shtar. So therefore, there's no problem in the first place. Okay. The question is, the Gemara asks, umi baki Rebbe mimakosher. The question is, now we're seeing in this story, and we're seeing in this whole discussion, that Rebbe is obviously very familiar with the concept of how a shtar mekosher is written, in particular that he knows that detail about how a shtar mekosher is dated later than a regular shtar. Incidentally, by the way, the fact is you do have a Mishnah in Masechet Shviyos that says that a shtar choiv meucher is kosher, that a post-dated shtar is kosher. So now, forget about the whole difference of shtar poshet or shtar mekosher over here. A regular shtar poshet, you would be able to post-date, you would be able to date a year or whatever later, and it would still be kosher. According to Rebbe in Or Gemara over here, who holds kosvin shover, why wouldn't that be a problem? So according to him, why would that not be a problem? So Tosfos at the beginning of the Perek discusses that point and says that first of all, Rebbe may well disagree with that. Taka, we do have an opinion later on in our Perek that says that a post dated shtar is possible. And then also it's different with a shtar me'ucher. We know to begin with, the loiver realizes that it's post-dated because he knows now is year two and we're taking a shtar poshet and we're writing in year three. So he's going to realize to begin with that's how it was. And then when they write out the shover, when they write out the receipts, when he pays off, then he's going to write out in the receipt, this is in payment of the shtar, which is dated such and such. But here with a shtar me'ucher, the loiver may not realize this point that a shtar mekusher is always post-dated a year later. In other words, the point is, a shtar me'ucher would just be a regular case. You have a regular shtar, you're used to writing that it's year two, and punct over here, you're writing year three, and the loiver is going to pick up on that. But here with a shtar mekusher, where to begin with, the whole format of it is different than a regular shtar, then the loiver may not realize that point that a shtar mekusher to begin with is dated later than normal, is always dated later than normal. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Me baki Rebbe mimakosher." So, are you telling me that Rebbe is familiar with the details of a shtar mekosher, and he knows this particular detail that the date in a shtar mekosher was always written as if it was a year later? There was actually a case of a shtar mekosher that was brought to Rebbe. And Rebbe looks at it and says, "Wait a second, this shtar is post-dated. The date in it is a year later than it's supposed to be." So Zunin, one of the Chachamim of that time, says to Rebbe, we find, by the way, in the Gemara here and there, we find a balabos in the times of Rav Gamliel named Baitus ben Zunin, and here and there the Gemara derives halachas from things that he did, because everything he did was alpi Chachamim. Very likely this Zunin that we're dealing over here, that we're talking about over here, was a descendant of his. Anyway, so he says to Rebbe, he says, "Kach min hogash shel umazu." This is how this nation does that. This is how a particular goyish nation does this. Molach shana moin l'shtayim. When the king is only in his first year, they write that he's already in his second year. It's covered for him, as if to say, like he's already old and experienced in his kingship. Shtayim moin l'shalosh. If he's already in his second year, then they write as if it was his third year. So therefore, again, once you have that precedent that there are people who do that, so therefore the Chachamim use that in a Shtar Mekosher, because again, we want a Shtar Mekosher to be as different as possible from a Shtar Pasher. So we see that Rebbe did not know that point, and Zunin had to tell it to him. And the answer is exactly that. Basa de Shama, Savra. Well, exactly that. Rebbe didn't know that point. Basa de Shama, Zunin, Savra. That's exactly it. Before, Rebbe did not know that detail. Now that Zunin told Rebbe that, he accepted it. Well, good. Now, later on, when we deal with Rav Chaninim and Gamliel's opinion in our Mishnah, then Rebbe had that knowledge that he had gotten from Zunin to be able to say that Rav Chaninim and Gamliel's idea of turning a Shtar Poshet into a Shtar Poshet won't work, because you're going to end up with a Shtar that seemingly is dated a year later than it's supposed to be. Okay. More on the topic of dating of shtaris. Hahu shtara davakosebe b'shnas poini orchon. There was a shtar that said in it that the halva, or whatever it is, took place in the year of Pliny the Orchon. Now, the point is, it didn't say what number year he's in. It just says King Pliny Orchon. What does that mean? So Omer Rav Chanina, Yibodik Emesai Omer Orchon Ba'Orchonusei. What we have to do is we have to find out when this Orchon assumed office. And then we're going to say the fact that it says Pliny Orchon means it's in his first year. The word Orchon, that Rashbam learns, it's related to a word in Aramaic. You have a word arich, which means proper. So when we call the guy Orchon, it means we're saying he's properly established in his kingship. And we would do that only the first year, only when he first became king. Tosfos actually points out that an Orchon is not necessarily a king per se. Based on the continuation of the Gemara over here, it comes out, Tosva says, that an Orchon actually seems to be more like a temporary official. Usually he's appointed for a year, and he serves only for a year. There was a title, Orchon, that was used as kind of like the title of the mayor, or whatever you want to call it, of certain Greek cities or whatever. So the pashtus is the same kind of thing. Usually they would serve for only one year. So Rav Chanina is saying that you have to check. You have here, it says Orchon. It doesn't say a year. You can assume that means it was in its first year. So the Gemara asks why. The Dilma de Orich Malchose. Why? The word Orchon can also be related to the word Oruch in Lashon Kodesh, which means long, which means that he's already been king for many years. And now the problem is we don't know what year the Shtar is dated. The answer is Omer Poshia Kachman Hogash Shal Umazu, because this is the way this nation, the pastors, some Goyish nation did. Shonu to Shonu Kohen like Orchon. When the guy is appointed, again, whether we're talking about a king or whether, like Tosfos is saying, we're talking about some other appointed official, they call him Orchon in honor of the fact that now his Melucha is Arich, is properly established. If then he's still in office in the second year, Kodele Digun, then they call him Digun, which means the second one. Then Ashbam points out Kodev Loloshen Laz Shalonu. This is similar to the French language that the Ashbam spoke. We know we have the word in English also. We have a number of words that have the word di in them, di, that means two. Carbon dioxide and other such words, and it's distantly related to the word two in English. So digun means the two time, meaning that he's already in his second year. So therefore, if we see that it says Orchon and not digun, then we know that he's in his first year. So the Gemara asks for Duma Abrui Abruhu Vahodarechmu. Okay, but then still, isn't there the possibility that maybe he was in office for many years? Then they deposed or fired him, and then they reappointed him. And now he's called Orchan again, but it's not his first year. So if we have a shtar that says Plani Orchan, how do we know that it means it's Davka from the first year that he was appointed as this official? Maybe he was reappointed a second time after being deposed. So again, the problem is that then we don't have a clear date on the shtar. So now the Ritva points out with regular shtaris that are dated by the years of the king, because it's not usual that a king where we date things by his years. We say year two, year three, or whatever of the king, and then we're going to be concerned. What if he was deposed and reappointed? It's not common enough. Someone wants to claim that, let him bring proof for that. But here, where to begin with, you don't even have as Tosfos said, an Orchan is not really a king. It's just some kind of local official, and it's much more likely to begin with that he was appointed only for the time being, or that he was fired and reappointed. So then we have this concern. The answer is Amar Abiyamia, how who Orchan Digun Karulai. In that case, they would call him Orchan Digun. In other words, Orchan that he's in his first year, Digun the second time. So again, if the shtar says only Orchan, then we know that it means it's his first year, his first time. Okay. So in this connection, having talked about these numbers that we're using, like the word digun, which means two times, so now the Gemara digresses to talk about the use of that word in other contexts as well. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Harini Nazir Hina. Suppose a person says, I will be a Nazir Hina. Now, what does the word Hina mean? It's the Greek word for one. It's in parenthesis over here because here we're going to have that sumchos is going to explain that word. So in any case, Harei knows it. Sumchos Omer, sumchos says, henna achas. If he says, I will be a nazir henna, then it means he's taking on himself one term of nazirus of 30 days. Because the word henna means one. In Greek, it means one. It's distantly related to the word one in English. Digun Shtayim. If he says, I will be a Nazir Digun, then it means he's taking on himself two times Nazirus. Because again, we said Digun means twice. Trigun. If he says, I'm going to take on Nazirus Trigun Sholish, then it means he's Chayev in three terms of Nazirus. Each one would be 30 days, and at the end of it, he would shave, bring his Korbanus, and start the next one. Tetrigun Arba. If he says, I'm going to be a Nazir Tetrigun, like Tetra as an English prefix, means four times. Pantigun Chomish. And if he says, I'm going to be a Nazir Pantigun, like the word Pentagon in English, then it means he's taking on five terms of Nazirus. Now, what's the chiddush in this? Is Sumchos just giving us a language lesson in Greek? So, this Gemara is also in Nazir. Rashi, or at least the Pirush that's attributed to Rashi in Nazir, says the chiddush of it is that you're able to accept on yourself Nazirus in other languages. You shouldn't think that it's only in Lashon Kodesh that you can say Harini Nazir, you can say the equivalent in other languages as well, and it would work. Tosfos over here says that's Parshat also. Of course you could use other languages as well. So rather, Tosfos says, the Chiddush says, what if the person doesn't know what the word digun or trigun or whatever means? Nevertheless, it still would work, and it would mean that he's taken on himself two or three or whatever terms of Nazirus. The same way Tosfos says, as for example, it talks about at the beginning of Masechta Nedarim, that if a person were to say, I will be a Nozik, then he's considered a Nazir, because Nazir is one of the, it's called a kinui, it's called one of those secondary terms that you can use, that the Chachamim said is equivalent to the term Nazir, the same way Digun is equivalent to the word two, and Trigun to the word three, and so forth, and even if he doesn't know the meaning of the word Digun or Trigun or whatever, then it would mean he's taken on that many terms of Nazirus. Marshall, in fact, over here points out, that a point also you can realize in it is, in other words, that that when it comes in, Tosfos is, so in other words, in effect, what Tosfos is saying, that the Marshal explains, is that when you in general, when you're using Goyish languages, yes, you have to know what you're saying. But here, what we're saying is that basically these words, digun, trigun, and so forth, hein, digun, trigun, and so forth, those were making the equivalent of Loshon Chachamim. We're saying the same way as if a person says nozik, and he becomes a nozir, even though he doesn't know what the word nozik means. In the same way, if he were to use the word digun, then he would be a nozir twice, even though a nozir twice, even though he doesn't know the meaning of the word digun, because we wouldn't treat that like regular loshen nachrim, but rather we would treat it as something, as a term that the chachamim invented for us to use. And Maharshal refers over here to something that the Ramban says, which then comes out somewhat different. It wouldn't have to be that you understand it the same way as you. So it doesn't mean, according to the Ramban's svara, we would still say that there's a difference between different kinds of lashonis, that some of them you have to understand in order for it to be valid as nazirus, and the same way with the other ones. So basically the machloikus would be that Marshal would hold within the languages of the goyim. Nachum, we're not going to make the distinction. The Marshal would say, once that we're establishing over here, that saying digun, saying I will be a nozir digun, is enough to make him a nozir twice, even if he doesn't know the meaning of the word digun, the same way if he were to be using the word for twice in some other language which he doesn't know either, then the Marshal would hold, this is how Moshe Feinstein explains it in Dibros Moshe, that Marshal would hold that if he uses some other word for twice in some other language which he doesn't know, then it would also work and he's a nozer twice, whereas according to the Ramban, and whereas Marshal, who quotes the Ramban, would be saying that there's only a specific thing by these words that we're bringing over here, digun and trigun and so forth, and not with other Goyish languages. Another place in which we find these numbers that comes up in a different area of halacha, Tana Rabbanan, Vais Ogul, if you have a round house that has no corners at all, digun, or if the house is digun, it has two corners, meaning that it's shaped like a half circle, shaped like a capital letter D, trigun, or if the house has three corners, it's a triangle, pentigun, or if it's a pentagon, enim etamim in a goyim, such houses are not able to become tamei with tzaras. Tetrigun, but if the house has four walls, where again tetri is Greek for four, so tetrigun means that it has four sides, four corners, metamim in a goyim, such a house would be able to become tamei with tzaras. So again, we have these same words, trigun, tetrigun, pentagon, like we had in the previous one, which is why the Gemara is bringing it in over here. So the Gemara says, Menahanimidi, where do we know that from? That only a four-walled house is able to become tamei with negoyim. So the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in the Braisa, when it talks about in the Pesukim about tzaras and houses, you have like this. Lamaila, you have one of the Pesukim that mentions about that he sees tzaras on the walls of the house. You have the Pesuk could have said, by the way, if you look, by the way, in the Rashbam, you can see a diagram of a pentagon over there to illustrate what it's like. It could be like that. It could be like a picture. It could be like the shape of a home plate. It could be like the picture. It could be like the pentagon in Washington, D.C., whatever. The point is that anything other than four walls. So why is that? So like this, Lamaila, you have an earlier pasuk in the parish of Negoyim where it says the ra the hini an nega bekirei sabayis. It says he sees that the nega is on the walls of the house, plural. Now, Oimer kir, the Torah could have just said kir habayis, and instead it says kirois, the walls. So therefore, shayim, so far that means that there are two. So far, that means that there are two walls. Lamata hu omer. Then you have further down, a couple of psukim later. Also, kiros. Also, you have where it says a couple of psukim later. Also, it says that the kohen comes back and he sees that the nega is spreading the kiros habayis on the walls of the house. Again, it could have said the kir habayis, and instead it said the kiros. So therefore, so shayim. So that adds another two. Harei kan arba. So therefore, that means that it has to have dafka four walls. So if it's round and it has only one wall, and if we have the other shapes that we said over here, then it doesn't have four walls. Now, the Rashbam points out, you do have another place in those psukim where it says the word kir. It says, v'hinei anega shofel min akir. The pasuk says that the nega looks like it's like it's deeper, like it's embedded into the wall. So why don't we darshan from that a fifth one? So the answer is because that's needed legufoy. That's needed just to tell us that where do you find saras of houses is on the wall. So that we don't darshan an extra wall from. But the fact that we have two psukim where it could have said kir and instead it says kirois. From that we learn that it has to have four walls, and therefore that means that if there's any other number of walls, anywhere from zero to however many, anything other than four, then it's not going to be able to become tameh with negayim. The point is, again, we brought this in over here because we have these same words over here, trigun, tetrigun, pantigun, and digun, that we had before. The Rashbam, by the way, brings an interesting point also from Rabbeinu Hanano. Here we said, Simchus had told us the word hina means one, and therefore if a person said, I'm going to be a nazir hina, then it means he's taking on himself one term of nazirus. So the Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Hanano another interesting point, another drosha of Chazal on this word hina, where we have, there's a pasuk that says, hein yiras Hashem hi chochma. Literally, hein in Lashon Kodesh means behold. Behold, the real chochma is fear of Hashem. So the Chazal darshan from it that Hashem has in his world only the one real treasure of Yiras Shamayim. And we learn that, again, from this word hein, which we darshan as if it's actually a Gemara in Shabbos. But it's actually a Gemara in Shabbos. Rashbam says maybe Rabbeinu Hananel's version of the Gemara actually had it over here as well, which is why he mentions it. That we're saying that Hashem has in his world only the one thing, hein, Meloshin Heina, only the one treasure of Yiras Shamayim. Because like the Gemara says elsewhere, Hakol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Miyiras Shemayim, everything is in Hashem's hands, except for whether a person is going to fear Hashem or not. And therefore, so that's the most precious thing for Hashem, because so to speak, that's not something that he can get himself, that's something that he depends on us to give him. Continuing on the topic of Shtar Mekusher, the Gemara continues, Ahom Mekusher De'Osel Kamei Rebbe. A Shtar Mekusher one time was brought to Rebbe, of Omer Rebbe Ein Zman Bazeh. And Rebbe said, wait a second, this document doesn't have a date in it. So how can we know when to collect from? Omer Le Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe Le Rebbe. So Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe, Rebbe's son, answers him, Shema Ben Kshor of Muvla. Maybe the date is hidden between the folds, between the stitches. Again, like we said, a Shtar Mekusher is folded up and stitched, or rolled up and tied, or whatever. Maybe the date is someplace over there where we don't notice it. Sure enough, Palye, Rebbe opened up the shtar, v'chazi, and he saw the date over there. Hoder chozebe Rebbe bebishus. Then Rebbe gave an angry look to Reb Shimon. He thought that Reb Shimon himself had written that shtar. And he didn't like that idea, b'chlal, because there's two problems, the Rashbam says. First of all, by Rebbe's times, they weren't commonly doing a Shtar Mekusher anyway. We see before that Rebbe didn't even know about the dating system that they use in a Shtar Mekusher until Zunin told him about it. So by Rebbe's times, the use of a Shtar Mekusher was kind of falling out of use, and Rebbe didn't appreciate the idea that Reb Shimon would be writing such a shtar still, because people are not familiar with it, and you never know, people are going to end up making mistakes. Another point that Rashbam says is that after all, here you see the date was so deeply buried that Rebbe himself couldn't find it at first. So how could you write the shtar that way? Be more careful next time. Amalei, said of Shimon, to defend himself, says, Lava nok savte, Rabbi Yehuda chaita kasve. He says, I didn't write it, Rabbi Yehuda chaita. Rabbi Yehuda, the chaita literally means the tailor. So he wrote it. Omalei, so Rebbe tells him, don't talk like that. Kloch meloshen hara azeh, stay away from this kind of loshen hara. Meaning, it would have been enough for you to say, I didn't write it. You didn't have to tell me who actually did write it. That would be a form of loshen hara to say that. You do have a situation the Chofetz Chaim talks about, for example, in Hilchos Lashon Hara. For example, what about if the only way to clear, like this, for example, if Reb Shimon had just said, I didn't write it, and stopped there, then he knows that Rebbe would believe him. So he doesn't have to mention Rebbe Yehuda Chaita's name. What if you have a situation where the only way to clear your name, the other person doesn't sound to believe you, unless you tell me who actually did it, would you be allowed to? That's a question. In any case, over here, though, the point is, Rebbe is telling him, you didn't have to tell me who wrote it. It would have just been enough for you to say that you did, that it would have just been enough for you to just say that you didn't write it. Similarly, the Gemara tells, another story involving Rebbe and his son Reb Shimon in the same vein. Zimnin have a Yosef Kamei. Another time Reb Shimon was sitting in front of his father Rebbe, the Kaposik Sidra, and Rebbe was saying and finishing off a section of Tillin. A sidra would be, you find, for example, at the end of each chumash, you have usdorav, you have, there's a certain number of sdorim in the chumash they used to have in Eretz Yisrael. There was a minute to lay the Torah in a 3-year cycle, so they had shorter parashiyos than we do. And there's other places in Tanakh, throughout Tanakh also, we find that Tanakh is divided into sdorim like that. So he was finishing off a section of Tillim. Elsewhere, Rashi explains that it means that he was finishing one of five Sfarim. Actually, Rabbeinu Gershom says over here it means he was finishing one of the five Sfarim of Tillim, whatever. Anyway, so he was finishing off a section of Sefer Tillim. Omar Rebbe, and Rebbe says, Kamam Yushuf, Savzeh. Like, look how, I'm very impressed. Look how clear and neat this handwriting is in this Tillim. Omalei, Lavanak Savdeh, Ela Yehuda Chayta Kaste. And again, Reb Shimon tells him, I didn't write it, Yehuda Chayta wrote it. Omalei, and again, Rebbe tells him, Kloch Meloshon Hara Azeh, stay away from this Loshon Hara. Well, we have to ask, the Shlema Hossam, by the case of the Shai Makoshu, Ika Loshon Hara. True, there is Loshon Hara, because the fact is that the Shai was written not in such a good way. Ela Hocha, either that the Shai Makoshu shouldn't be written at all, or that the date was buried in too deeply. Ela Hocha, but here in the case of Tillin, my Loshon Hara Ika, what Loshon Hara? On the contrary, Rebbe is praising the guy who wrote it so neatly. And the answer is, Mishum did Reb Dimi, because we have to take into account what Reb Dimi said. The Tony Reb Dimi, Ahur did Reb Safra, Reb Dimi, the brother of Reb Safra, taught, Lo Olam Ayisapa Odom, Tevaser Shachaveri, a person should not speak in the praise of somebody else, Shemitech Tevaser, Bolu De Ro'osai. By speaking in his praise, it comes out to saying something bad about him. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, we should praise people. We have all over where the Gemara praises Chachamim, a Yid should praise another one. So there's a couple of different points in it. One is where you're doing it. So the Rashbam says what it means is you're saying so much. You're saying a lot of good about him. And therefore, sooner or later, somebody's going to say, you know, there's somebody not so good about him. Different other explanations include that you're talking about that you're saying it in front of people who don't like him. So therefore, they're particularly likely to say, you know what, who cares for him? Listen, I know such and such about him. And therefore, that brings the Lashon Hara. The Marsha says these two things go together. The reason why the Gemara is telling these two stories back to back, not just because in both of them Rebbe is telling Reb Shimon Kloch Meloshon Hara, but also because there's a connection between them. Once we establish that this Tillim was written by Yehuda Chayta, then we see also that the same handwriting was used on that Shtar Mekusher, and therefore that confirms what we said before, that Yehuda Chayta had written the Shtar Mekusher, and therefore that means, in other words, in effect, with the praise that he wrote this Tillim, you're also confirming the Lashon Hara, that he wrote the Shtar Mekusher, which Rebbe did not approve of, and therefore that's why Rebbe is telling him Kloch Meloshon Hara, because the one reinforces the other.